golden wings spread above the quillons to form a crossguard, and a single ruby blood drop looked out from between their pinions. Khan tossed it from hand to hand as a human might with a knife, weighing it, judging it.
I am always surprised that you like it here.
I don't.
Yet, here we are again.
Khan let the weapon rest in his grip. He frowned down at the long blade and shook his head. Then he turned to the rack and slotted the sword back into place. Sigismund watched the World Eater pick up each weapon in turn. He waited. He knew why Khan did this, and he knew that it was nothing to do with which weapon the World Eater eventually chose. He appreciated the reason, even though the two of them had never spoken of it. At last, Khan gripped the handle of an axe that was more cleaver than war weapon. He rolled his shoulders, muscles flowing smooth under skin. The twitching in his face faded to almost nothing, his breath barely a murmur between his teeth. Sigismund held his sword low, its point almost touching the sand. The chains around his wrists clinked as he settled into stillness. Khan's eyes flicked up to the plasteel links. He grinned, the light dancing in his eyes.
Imitation is flattery, I suppose. What was it that Jubal did?
Cut them.
Ha! I always liked him.
He asked if I was afraid of dropping my sword.
Are you?
No. He said the chains were like a prison.
Khan's grin drained from his face. The skin of his scalp twitched around the nails again, and a shiver ran through him.
Shall we carry on with this foolishness?
Sigismund nodded, and a thunderclap of steel replaced the silence. Once again, they were two figures whirling and striking at one another. Khan's axe rang against the sword, swept away, and lashed back again. He was breathing hard. Spittle foamed at the corner of his mouth. His eyes were wide, the pupils black wounds in bloodshot white. Sigismund took one step backwards, deflecting each blow that came. Khan pulled away, growled, and hammered in again. Sigismund parried lightly, and the axe whistled past his shoulder. He slammed the pummel of his sword into Khan's forearm and then at his face. The World Eater ducked, came up, and crashed his skull into Sigismund's forehead. The headbutt slammed home, but even as it did, Sigismund dropped and turned. Khan's wrist caught between his sword hilt and arm. Khan's momentum flipped him over and into the air. He twisted as he fell and landed on his feet, tensing to lunge back. Sigismund nudged the sword tip against the back of Khan's neck. Khan bared his teeth. He was trembling, face twitching. He took a long, slow breath and then nodded once. Sigismund raised his sword. Blood clotted on his face. A deep gash marked the cheek under his left eye, and his nose was a mashed ruin.
Now, at least, it looks like you have been fighting.
That was a foolish move. You committed too much.
I heard it worked for that bastard Sevatar. Besides, it is our way. When we are losing, we make sure the other side bleeds more than us.
You are holding back. You always do.
Khan shook his head, face still twitching, and gestured at the circle of sand beneath their feet.
No, brother. I am just not very good at this.
I have stood with you in battle, Khan. I have seen how you fight. Or have you forgotten?
I have not forgotten, but this is not a battlefield.
Your brothers fight here as though it is.
No, they do not, and neither do you. True war is not control, brother. It is not bound by a fighting pit's walls. It is the whirl of chance and fury, where there is nothing for you to cling on to. You fight because you must, because certainty drives you. Without that, what would you be?
I will forgive the implication of your words, brother.
Always so sure. Always so much control, even in anger. But if the pillars of your world shook, if duty took you down a path where nothing was certain...
Khan reached up and ran his hand over the butcher's nails, bonded to his skull.
What then?
I would be nothing.
I will forgive the implication of your words, brother. And I don't think you would be nothing without your chains of certainty. I think that then, I truly would not want to face you. Even here.
No.
No. Because then, I really would have to try and kill you.
They died too easily.
Sigismund does not need to look at Morn to see the contempt on her face. In truth, he agrees with her, and the implication of what she says worries him, but the atmosphere inside the comet shrine worries him more. The air has become thicker. Static crackles along the bone-lined walls as though it were lightning earthed from a growing storm. Then, there are the shadows. Sometimes they seem to move. Sometimes Sigismund is sure that they grow when he looks away. It feels unnatural, like nothing he has felt before. It concerns him. It concerns him very much. Ran does not seem to notice.
What do you mean they died too easily? They would have known that someone would come for them. The treachery of the word bearers must have been long in the making. Yet they met us in the outer halls with at least half their strength, died, and then melted away. Tell me, brother, does that not worry you?
They resisted.
But not enough.
Why would they do that?
Sacrifice.
Sigismund feels something shiver across his skin. Morn's word disturbs him, and he does not know why.
Sacrifice? Like the followers of gods? Before the coming of the Emperor's truth. You can't mean it.
That is exactly what I mean.
This is the Imperium. Even in rebellion, those ways are long dead.
This is no longer the age we thought it was, brother. Its truths are not the same. And neither are its weapons.
But why?
Sigismund raises his hand, his Templar brothers falling in silently behind him. Two doors lie ahead of them. Twice the height of a space marine, they gleam with bronze and polished bones. Sigismund blinks. There is a sudden and growing pressure behind his eyes as he looks at them. At the edge of his sight, the shadows seem to twitch again.
A trap. A trap whose dimensions we cannot see or fully understand. That is what you are thinking, is it not, Lady Morn?
Yes.
Morn steps closer to the doors, her bodyguards close in her wake. The plates of their armor hiss and click as they move. Ran follows, his fingers flexing on the haft of his axe.
Then what would you suggest we do?
Morn turns back to them. Behind the crystal of her visor, she is smiling. For a second, Sigismund almost smiles back.
Why, the same as you have been itching to do since you saw those doors, Seneschal Ran. Kick them open!
Morn runs at the high doors, pneumatics shuddering across her exoskeleton as she moves. She moves faster than Sigismund thought she ever could. The pistols in her hands are glowing as they gather charge. He launches after her, sword flashing with lightning as its energy field ignites. Ran lets out a bark of laughter and annoyance, then follows, Templars and shield-bearers closing around them. Morn hits the door. Fragments of bone inlay and bronze spin through the air. They buckle open, ringing like a struck gong. Then Morn is out and into the flame-lit space beyond, her bodyguards at her shoulders, armored plate flaring as it flows with their strides. Sigismund and Ran are only 2 paces behind. This is madness. But now it has begun, there is only one way, and that way is forward. Sigismund crosses the threshold of the chamber. Red threat markers boil across his helmet view, his momentum driving him into a flat sprint. He sees it then, waiting behind the translucent target rooms. Dozens of space marines ring the central point of the chamber. They are kneeling, heads bared and bowed. Each of them has a knife in his hands, spikes of black glass, iron or clouded crystal. At their center, a figure stands alone. His armor is black with crawling script. A casket of gray stone lies before him. Shadows and unclean light smoke from it. The air vibrates, pulsing to the drone of chanting voices. The bodyguard's heavy cannon spin to firing speed. Morn strafes sideways, her clawed feet clacking on the stone flags. Fire spits from the spinning rotor cannons. Rahn's axe is high above his head. Morn's pistols are keening, circles of red energy blooming around their barrels in each instant before they fire. The closest word-bearers explode where they are kneeling. Their blood fizzes as it hits the polished floor. Corpuscent dances in the eyes of the skulls which line the ceilings and walls. The air is darkening, crawling with shadows cast by no light. But Sigismund has his gaze fixed upon the lone, standing figure. The blackened warrior looks up. The words inked across his face coil around his eyes like snakes. His mouth opens, and he speaks a single word.
Peace.
The sound rolls through the twisting air. As one, every word-bearer plunges his dagger up under his chin. The world freezes. Light becomes dark, and dark turns to blinding day. A single high note echoes out, extending endlessly, growing and obliterating all other sound. There is a long moment, a sickening, soft instant, stretched like a sinew. Then the word-bearers are rising from the floor. Blood and smoke spray from their mouths. They are juddering, standing as though pulled up by wires. Their armor splits. Shapes step out from the cracked ceramite. Their flesh is pale and blood-soaked. Eyes, mouths, and scales form and dissolve across their bodies as these unnatural things take their first shuddering steps in reality. This is like nothing Sigismund has ever seen. Like nothing that should be seen. Only the warrior at the center remains unchanged. His eyes are sunken and cold. They are the eyes of sorrow, not triumph. Sigismund feels voices rattling inside his skull, pulling at his thoughts. The air is thick. He can taste acid in his mouth. Time has fled. He can feel thoughts and doubts and memories bubbling against the force of his will. He sees the face of his father, Rogel Dorn, a trust in his eyes. He sees only the path ahead of him. There is only the sword in his hand, only the enemy before him. There is only one feeling that he will allow, pure and bright, like a torch kindled in the darkness. Fury. He blinks. The world snaps back into place. He is running forwards, aware that the Imperial Fist's shield wall is broken, aware that this battle is now a whirling storm of blades, gunfire, and claws. In spite of himself, he thinks of Khan, of the World Eater wading into battle with rage, stabbing at the back of his skull. The creatures leap at him, claws extending at the ends of their limbs. His sword strikes the top of a half-formed head. It bursts apart, blood and pus misting the air. He can smell offal and incense even through his helm. Gunfire is roaring close by. The creature's howls rise as they spin and leap forwards. He sees Rahn throw his axe, sees it spin end over end, sees the still active power field drag lightning in its wake. It strikes the nearest beast and the thing staggers, black cracks spreading across its flesh. It shrieks. Rahn unslings his second axe and runs to meet it. But the creature is not dying, and neither are those that swarm back at him, clawing his shield down even as he fights to keep it steady. Sigismund sees a talon of bone flash out and split Rahn's faceplate effortlessly. Blood, bright and sudden, flicks into the air. Rahn staggers. Sigismund is a blur as he slices towards his brother. Something is wrapped around Ran's axe arm, something that rolls and glistens like chewed meat. He is falling now. The creatures surge forward, blood and acid drooling from distended jaws. Sigismund cleaves through the last circle of creatures. The cut is backhanded, left to right, like a scythe reaping corn. He feels his blade tremble as it passes through flesh and bone. A space opens before him, and he is stepping into it, stepping over the fallen shape of Ran. He sweeps his sword back, and the creatures shriek at him again as they recoil. He glances down. Ran is a ruin of streaked armor and clotted blood. Red bubbles are foaming from the split faceplate of his helm.
Get up. I deserve to die tonight.
Ran pulls himself to his feet. His axe and shield are still in his hands. He sways for a moment, then shakes himself, scattering blood like a dog shaking water from its fur. The creatures part before them, pulling back like a retreating tide of unwholesome flesh. The din of battle still sings in the air, but for a second it seems more distant. The blackened word-bearer stands before them. Smoke peels from him as he steps forwards, and the surrounding creatures chitter and moan like curbed animals.
It was not supposed to be you, Sigismund, first son of Dawn. You were not supposed to be here. Another death waited for you.
The word-bearer pauses, turns, his hand extending towards the open stone casket on the dais.
Be silent, traitor!
Ran spits and lunges forward, fresh blood scattering from his wounds as he charges. Sigismund begins to move an instant later. Something is moving inside the casket, something that writhes like snakes in black oil. The word-bearer's hand closes around it. Grey lightning whips up his arm. The marks upon his arm are writhing as the edges of his body blur. Ran raises his shield and hacks down with his axe. Sigismund hears the grunt of effort and sees the puff of blood on Ran's breath. The blow is not neat, not elegant. It is the oldest of the cuts of war. A killing stroke, swift and direct. The word-bearer turns, outline and shape blurring at speed. Something strikes Ran's shield, but the shield does not break. It simply becomes nothing. Ran slumps back with the force of its unmaking, folding like a cut rope. The dark warrior sweeps the weapon back. Its form is changing, flowing between shapes, solidifying and dissolving. It hisses as the word-bearer brings it up to deliver the death blow. Ran is motionless on the floor, wisps of darkness now seeping from his wounds. Sigismund's sword blocks the cut. White light splinters the air. The two weapons grind against each other.
The fire and wind spoke of your end, Templar.
Sigismund pulls away. The word-bearer drags his weapon back. Its shape congeals into a long, serrated sword, blood weeping from its toothed edge.
Your death was ordained. A grave of stars waited for you. But here you are.
The jagged sword whips forward. Sigismund steps past, and the word-bearer's cut follows him. He twists to avoid it and sees that his opponent's guard is open. He lunges. All his intent, all his being and years of training are carried in that thrust. The word-bearer blinks aside, his shape and form skipping between moments as though he had not moved. A black silhouette remains where he was, fading in the air like a bruise. He riposts. The sword changes as it descends. It is a black mace now, heavy-headed and barbed, a frozen explosion of night trailing fire after it. Sigismund's sword catches the blow, but too late. The impact lifts him from his feet. He feels bones grinding in his sword arm as the shock reverberates through him. He lands on the floor, spinning quickly to rise. Creatures skitter out of his way, cackling in countless voices. Damaged servos howl in his armor joints. Red warnings light his helmet display. Inside his head, he is fighting to hold onto his focus, to hold onto the shackled fury that is his fire. The word-bearer is less than 5 strides away, the mace held in his hands, the dark pits of his eyes unmoving. He rolls his neck and shoulders, slowly, casually. The movement reminds Sigismund of Khan.
Have you told your father?
A chill flicks through Sigismund as he straightens painfully.
Have you confessed to him why you forsook your duty to return to Terra?
The words echo through him. It has been months since he encountered Keela on the Phalanx, since she had shown him what was to come, since he had demanded to return to Terra with Rogel Dorn. And in all that time, her words had not left his thoughts. But he had shared them with no one.
There are no secrets in the war. I see your heart, and I see your fate. I am shriven, and the gods have placed your ending in my hands. You will not leave this place alive. You will not live to see your Primarch fail. You will not live to see this false Imperium fall. The witch lied to you, Templar. She lied.
Sigismund feels cold winding through his limbs. He is stepping forwards, his sword rising, but it feels separate from him, like a dead limb chained to his hands. He hears Keela's voice, distant, calm, speaking to him from the corridors of memory.
You must choose your future and the future of your legion, Sigismund, first captain of the Imperial Fists.
Sigismund feels the blood beat in his veins. The word-bearer is moving so fast that it seems unreal. Shadow and oily smoke drags again in his wake. The voices come then, thrown from the blank night of the past.
Duty. It binds us. It keeps us. It guides us.
A blade is freedom, son of Dawn. Chain it, and you chain yourself.
He remembers the question that he had asked Keela on the Phalanx.
What is the other path?
Sigismund raises his sword, but the black mace crashes into his chest.
Death, Sigismund. Death and sacrifice.
Blood and darkness. The world is crumpling around him, becoming small, becoming a pit of pain to drown in. He cannot see, and the only sound is the thunder in his ears. One of his hearts has stopped. The other beats on, slicing his life away with every slowing pulse. He cannot feel the sword in his hand, cannot feel the shattered plates of his armor.
We exist to serve.
And there is nothing more?
Nothing more.
No matter where it leads us, or to what end.
But is it true that he has never been defeated? Never lost a duel? Never failed?
Never.
But if the pillars of your world shook, if duty took you down a path where nothing was certain. What then?
The world roars at him in color and sound, deafening, blindingly bright. He can see. A warrior stands above him, the black stains upon his armor crawling away into the air. The mace in his hands is flickering, jumping to other forms and then back. Creatures with flayed beast faces sway and spin behind him. The strobing fire of battle lights a domed roof. The warrior's mouth cracks open, smoke breathing from between pale teeth. His lips are burning as he speaks.
Peace.
He swings the black mace above his head. Sigismund's hand closes on the sword chained to it. Wounds are open across his body. Muscles shudder. His lone heart hammers in his chest. The mace howls as it rushes down to meet him. In that moment, he stabs upwards. The tip of the sword strikes the word-bearer just beneath the breastplate. The blade shivers in Sigismund's grip as it slices through armor, flesh, and bone and jabs into the power plant on the word-bearer's back. With sudden explosive force, Volatile chemicals and energy vent from severed cooling tubes and power conduits. Fire engulfs the word-bearer's body, stealing away any cry of surprise or pain. Then, his ribcage blows out. The word-bearer falls backwards, flames and sparks burning away his blood before it can even fall to the floor. Sigismund rises, pulling the sword free, reverses his grip and stabs downwards. The point rams into the word-bearer's mouth and through his skull into the polished stone beneath. He stands for a second, swaying, trying to focus through the blood and the pain. The battle is dissolving around him. The creatures are staggering, limbs and sinew quivering, as though some vital link has been severed. An ethereal wind is spinning through the chamber, green flames flaring from the bodies of the collapsing creatures. He can see his brother Templars now. Many lie bloody amongst the heaps of hacked flesh, but others are advancing towards him, firing and slicing the creatures even as they're pulled apart by the dying winds. Morn is walking amongst the fallen, flanked by her bodyguards. Her exoskeleton is wheezing, and she limps with a clatter of broken gears. She pauses to snap a beam of energy at a twitching shape made of slick muscle and half-formed feathers. The bodyguards move forwards, lifting the stone casket from the dais, and hurry to where Sigismund stands above the dead word-bearer. The black weapon still rests in the warrior's hands, its malformed shape fuming like newly forged iron. Morn is saying something to her bodyguards, but Sigismund is not listening.
Take the blade to the gunship. Burn the rest.
In his chest, his heart still beats out a rhythm in blood, a rhythm like the clash of swords. He looks to where Rahn lies, unmoving but groaning quietly, the axe still in his hand. He must live. He must. Sigismund pulls his sword from the word-bearer's skull. It slides free, but the flesh around it is charring and powdering away to ash, which lifts on the unnatural breeze.
Your duty is done, Templar.
His blood-stained tabard stirs in the air. The chains about his wrist clink. Slowly, the joints of his armor creaking, he raises the sword. His oaths of moment are fulfilled, and he touches the blade to his forehead.
No, it is never done.
The Sigillite by Chris Raitt, performed by Ramon Tickerham, Tim Treloar, and Toby Longworth. Khalid Hassan sat in the antechamber, trying not to sweat, trying not to allow his hands to shake, trying not to do anything that would bring him any more dishonor to his rank and regiment. He forced himself to remain still, his back against the polished marble wall, his palms pressed down onto the fabric of his ceremonial dress trousers, the high, stiff collar prickled at his neck, irritating his freshly shaved skin. He felt ludicrous, cleaned and trimmed and starched like a living meal to be served in some unholy banquet.
This is absurd. I was not one this tight on the mission itself.
He forced himself to go through the motions, to assess the current scenario, to run through the options.
Keep it together.
The antechamber was large, just one of a series of opulent rooms he'd passed through in sequence. He had been accompanied in by a man in a black shift and velvet shoes who had padded silently like a cat. The man had said nothing, just stared at Hassan with inscrutable, heavy-lidded eyes. He'd left him alone in the final room with a slight bow, withdrawing as sleekly as he'd arrived, closing two bronze-paneled doors with a quiet click of locks. Another pair of identical doors stood shut on the facing wall. According to the gold-chased chrono on the mantelpiece opposite, Hassan had sat alone for 7 minutes. It had felt more like an eternity. At least the surroundings were comfortable. The air was cool and clear, filtered through shuttered windows. Hassan could hear the languid gurgle of a fountain in the courtyard outside. A low table stood in the center, upon which rested a silver ewer, a towel, and a single cut crystal glass that glinted in the soft light. Hassan had not touched it. He had sat in the same starched position since being shown to his place by the feline steward. He had watched the play of sunlight through the shutters, smelled the floral aroma of the wood and the fabrics, listened to the quiet play of the fountain. He had seen it. Even if this was the last thing he saw, he had still seen it. How many men could say the same? He had seen the vision of the immortal emperor, the handiwork of 1,000 architects, the defensive masterpiece of the Primarch Rogal Dorn. Viewed from the incoming lander, it had been astonishing, magnificent, a sprawling fantasy of stone and adamantium and granite and gold. Defense towers jostled with observatories and terraced gardens, missile batteries and slotted bunkers thrust up tightly amid pillared libraries, burnished monuments to the pride and ambition of mankind, all picked out under the azure sky of the Himalayan peaks. Now, lost in the heart of its vastness, listening to the calming trickle of water, he could run through the events of the past few days. Captain Khalid Hassan of the 4th Clandestine Order, the most decorated of the serving officers of his regiment, a man who had loved his work so completely that he had had no life and no family outside of it, contemplated, with a certain fatality, the failure that had brought him to the Imperial Palace. The air was hot and dusty. His armor, black carapace plates, full-face helm with opaque visor and rebreather tubes, environment spine pack with internal pressure control, was coated with it. His filters were losing efficiency, and he could hear the echo of his own heavy breathing in his earpiece. Ahead of him, blurry through night vision, he could see the compound rearing up into the dust-thick darkness. It was ugly, squat, heavy, a defensible bastion in the Egyptian style. A few lights blinked and flickered in the gloom. Otherwise it was shadowy and sullen, surrounded by a solid perimeter wall broad enough for men to walk in pairs. Hassan laid low, feeling the hard scrabble of the desert fringes press into his armor. He rested his elbows on the ridge before him. Tiny magnocular lenses slipped down the inside curve of his helm visor and whirred into focus. He moved his head fractionally, sweeping across the walls. Each visible detail was recorded and cross-referenced with the internal schematic held in his suit's cogitator core. Last turret, 2 meters out of position, corrected. Sentries visible, moving along perimeter boundary. They haven't seen us. He suppressed a smile. And they won't. Farouk squirmed up alongside him, his body low and pressed into the dust.
Just say the word, Captain.
Everyone in position. All ready to go.
Hassan uploaded the revised tactical overlays to the squad. 15 acknowledgement sigils scrolled down his helm display. He switched to an overhead schematic showing the positions of his men. They were located around the perimeter in 5-man squads, each still in cover. 2 of the 3 teams were on the far side of the compound from Hassan's position, poised to attack the air defense tower and the atmospheric shield generators. Their sensor-resistant armor would keep all of them hidden. Until they broke inside, they would be all but invisible.
So what are we doing here, Captain?
Hassan smiled dryly.
Now? You ask me now? You're not going to tell me?
Hassan shook his head.
You know how it is.
All of them knew how it was. That was the point of the clandestine brigades. Restricted orders, special taskings, operations outside the Imperial chain of command. Farouk chafed at it the most, but then he'd come from a regular army regiment and was used to a less furtive way of war. As for this mission, Hassan knew little enough himself. The orders had been shunted into the regiment corps 6 days ago under heavy security cover. His men had rerouted from a routine sweep of the Colivis hives. Ever since the insurrection had begun, subversive activity had been endemic in the bigger population hubs. Hassan had even heard chatter over the grid about rogue legionaries staging a prison break. He didn't believe that one. There were always fanciful stories about those armor-clad superhumans. More since the news of the War Master's madness had filtered out. In any case, Hassan didn't place much faith in the Space Marines. They had a reputation, sure, but he doubted half of what was said about them could be true. The Imperium had been built by mortal men and women. Billions and billions of them, toiling towards a future free from the horrors of old night. Gen-hanced monsters had no place there. They were brutal, clumsy tools, and their time would pass, which left the way clear for more subtle weapons. He checked his chronometer.
Move.
Still out of visual range, all he saw of the other 2 teams were their marker rooms moving silently across his visor display. Farouk stayed motionless. Behind him, the rest of his own squad remained in cover. Hassan felt his pulse quicken as he counted down the seconds.
Let's go.
He pushed himself up, keeping his body low as he jogged out into the open. He heard the soft footfalls of his men close behind him. They broke clear of the ridge and swept across the open ground leading to the walls. As they ran, the earth was suddenly rocked by a series of hard, sharp explosions from the far side of the compound. The night sky flared up, red and angry. Arc lights burst into life, joined by the strained blare of intruder alarms. The sentries on the wall ahead of them disappeared from the parapet edges, drawn by the detonations at the opposite side of the facility. Hassan reached the base of the wall and prepared the grapnels.
Too easy.
Farouk joined him and took aim.
So far.
Hassan squinted as he pulled the trigger. The rope sailed up, clamping fast and pulling tight, and he began to climb. Soon, all 5 of them had reached the summit and they swung over the lip of the parapet. They took up their weapons. Projectile rifles, as sleek, black, and finely tooled as everything they carried. By the time the sentry spotted them, it was too late. Precise kill shots flashing in the night. More explosions rang out from the compound below. A shower of yellow sparks erupted in the distance, making the air smell briefly sulfurous.
First generators out.
Hassan grunted. Farouk was a good soldier, but his tactical commentaries quickly grew tiresome.
Let's just concentrate on our task, shall we?
Whatever you say.
The expanse of the compound spread out below. A loose collection of hangars and rock creek bunkers, all of them ugly, dark, and scoured by wind-driven sand. Fires had broken out amongst those on the far edge, sparked by the incendiaries planted by the 2 other teams. Hassan could see the silhouettes of guards crossing the open spaces, their movements hurried and ill-directed. They were still trying to reinforce the northern wall, over where the evidence of infiltration had been made most obvious. So far, so good.
That's the target.
Hassan moved along the parapet and gestured to one of the bunkers below. It was a nondescript building, just one of a dozen of a similar size and shape.
Ugly thing. It'll be uglier in a minute. Keep it quiet.
One by one, they rappelled to the ground. They kept low, running semi-hunched. Three more guards fell before they reached their destination, dropped by single rounds. When they reached the shadow of the bunker entrance, they crouched down, as inconspicuous as shadows. The bunker's blast doors were sealed and barred. Hassan clamped six hyperacid capsules along the join, then retreated and blew the charges. The thick metal doors dissolved in a steaming, foaming cloud. Hassan heard a cluster of short-lived screams as the guards on the other side inhaled the toxic mix of dissolving plasteel and airborne chem droplets. Otherwise, the breach was almost silent, masked by the continuing explosions and gunfire running along the northern wall. All that remained afterwards was a steaming, jagged void, its steel edges melted into stretched teardrops. Hassan got to his feet. The bunker interior beckoned, ink black and smelling of molten flesh and metal.
Now we enter. Now you enter.
Hassan stirred out of his memories. He couldn't see the speaker. He guessed it was the same man who'd shown him into the antechamber. He looked up, seeing that the second set of doors had opened. He hadn't noticed them unlock. The mechanism must have been extraordinarily smooth. He rose awkwardly. He could feel patches of sweat under his arms and around his collar and hoped they didn't show. His limbs felt stiff, as though he'd forgotten how to walk and needed reminding. Once through the doors, he passed into a vast sunlit chamber. One entire wall was given over to a long, unbroken expanse of glass. Circling mountains broke up the horizon beyond, glittering white in the sunlight. The floor was polished parquet. Eclectic items of furniture dotted the cavernous interior. A Louis Kahn's armoire stood next to a Unity-era lith projector, overlooked by a series of hyortoils and a cabinet containing priceless ceramics. It reminded him of a magpie's nest, a collector's den. Ostentatious, given the circumstances. Hassan was alone. The room was silent. The doors closed behind him, moving together as quietly and elegantly as they had opened. For a moment, he stood still, listening to the sound of his own breathing, wondering if the things he saw around him were even real. Perhaps this was a test. Perhaps he was being shown one final glimpse of glory before the end. Hassan knew they could have pronounced their judgment at any time. He had already given them all the information he could. He had been most careful about it, making sure the details were correct. Even in his failure, he had not stinted nor tried to excuse himself. That had always been his way, honesty, even in disgrace. Such, of course, were the values of the Imperium, the basis upon which his loyalty had always been commanded. Time passed. No one else entered the room. Hassan began to lose his sense of slow foreboding. He walked over to the windows, standing close to the glass and resting his fingertips against it. The vista spread out before him, a dizzying sweep across the palace's western marches. So much gold. So much of everything. Vertiginous battlements plunged like cataracts into thickets of bone-thin towers. Colossal buttresses soared up from the bones of the mountains, massive and eternal. Even Lord Dawn's heavy alterations along the outer walls hadn't obliterated all of the palace's old and innate beauty. Gazing over such vastness, it was hard not to feel strangely insignificant. The walls had already stood for centuries. They would endure for centuries more, a beacon of splendor amid an expanding empire of mortal exaltation.
I liked it better before Rogel really got to work.
The voice came out of nowhere. Hassan spun around, scanning across the chamber. He was still alone. The voice seemed to rise from the air around him, echoing from the panels and sinking into the fabric of the woven rugs.
I do not see you, Lord.
No, not yet. I cannot be in all places at once. We may save some time this way. Does it unsettle you?
Not at all.
Good. Then keep looking at the view. Remember it. With every passing day, it will get a little uglier. A little more worn. Just like us, eh?
Hassan turned back to the window. He wondered whether the speaker could see him. He assumed that he could, although one could never be sure. Throwing a voice was trivially easy. Such theatrics, as he well knew, were all part of the process.
You are not a man given to levity. That is what the reports all say. Serious-minded, diligent. I can sense that in you myself. You are the embodiment of everything the Emperor aspires to instill in humanity. He would admire you, I think, were he here with us.
The voice did not sound disdainful. Hassan could hear harshness in it, a harshness bred from long ages of wearying command, but also other things, a grain of sympathy, mostly resignation. It was all so very unexpected.
I have always endeavored to serve.
I know you have. But now you are here, with me, in this place. What you have been in the past, what you have done in the past, this is the reckoning for it. Do you know who I am, Captain Khalid Hassan?
I think so, Lord.
I am the Reckoner. I am the judge. I am the scrivener of the Imperium, the evaluator of its ocean of souls.
Hassan couldn't decide why he was being told this. Boastfulness? Possibly. It didn't sound like boastfulness, though. It sounded almost like sarcasm, a dry, self-aware sarcasm.
I am the Sigilite. I am the regent of terror. At my command, the fate of a million worlds is determined. And yet here I am, conversing with you as you look through my window and disapprove of my collections. Life is full of surprises, is it not?
Hassan almost found himself nodding in agreement.
It is, Lord.
And you know why you are here?
Because of what happened in Gyptus?
That is right. Think back, Khalid. Think back to what you did there. I will be with you soon. When I come, I will wish to know everything.
The lights had blown. Hassan Blink adjusted the gain on his helm's night vision and progressed cautiously. The bunker extended deep below ground level. A central corridor ran down the length of it, about 50 meters, from which smaller chambers branched off, each sealed by fresh sets of locked doors.
Getting anything? No life signs here.
Not yet.
The squad inched down the central corridor. Hassan heard nothing but the dim sounds of battle from outside. The other squads were doing a good job of drawing attention away, but they only had a short time in which to operate. He activated the proximity beacon on his palm-mounted Auspex and saw, with some relief, the target locator rune flicker into being.
Turn on the right.
Hassan motioned to a pair of slide doors some 30 meters ahead. Two of his troops remained in the bunker entrance, sunk in shadow, their weapons aimed to take out any intruders. Hassan, Farouk, and the third operative slunk down the corridor. As Hassan edged forward, he caught a faint hiss, like machine static. He paused.
You getting that?
Farouk looked at him.
Getting what?
Nothing. Sensor glitch.
They reached the chamber. It was locked and barred, just like the others.
Stand back.
Hassan drew fresh hyperacid canisters from his belt. As he moved, he heard a dull thud, followed by a whoosh of stale air. Hassan threw himself around, his gun held one-handed.
What then?
He stopped, seeing the motionless form of his squadmate on the floor.
Target!
Farouk opened fire. A juddering hail of ice-bright bullets sprayed down the corridor, chinking and splintering from the metal walls. Hassan joined in, firing into the darkness. The confined space erupted into a storm of gunshots.
Cease fire!
The last echoes of the volley died. The bunker sank back into darkness. Wisps of smoke rose up from the ravaged floor. Farouk slammed a fresh magazine into his rifle.
What was it?
Hassan could still see nothing on his proximity scan.
No idea. Never got a proper look.
Hassan glanced at the downed operative's body. A single slash had torn clean through his throat. Blood beneath him, thick and dark.
Stand by. Hold position.
His mind began to race, wondering how anything could have gotten so close without registering on his sensors. He reached up to his helm and depressed the release catch.
Remove your visor.
What? That's madness.
Do it.
Hassan's helm slid open, and he felt the hot, dusty air brush against his face. Deprived of his false-color night vision, everything was black. He still saw no sign of the thing that had attacked them. He felt vulnerable, nearly blind, stuck underground with something he couldn't detect. He heard Farouk's visor open.
Great, now we're blind.
When all else fails.
Hassan reached for a low-burn flare and keyed it for ignition.
Use the eyes you were born with.
He hurled the flare down the long corridor, hearing it bounce from the walls. The torch exploded into life, throwing a dull red bloom across the surfaces around it. In the brief burn time, Hassan saw something dark and hunched about 10 meters further down, pressed tight against the far wall. It was man-shaped and wearing some kind of sensor-reflective armor, veined with silver wires and nodes. As soon as the flare went off, the figure leapt from the wall and tore towards them.
Now! Shoot!
The enemy bounded towards them, darting between the spitting lines of fire with uncanny speed. Farouk winged it, blasting through the armor and the left shoulder, but it kept coming.
Bring him down!
Hassan fell back as he fired, aiming for the figure's shifting outline. Farouk screamed. Hassan saw steel talons flash in the darkness, ripping Farouk's protective carapace as though it were made of paper.
Farouk!
Hassan swung back in close, feeling his gun click empty. The enemy stared right at him then, just for an instant. The masked face caught in the jagged flashes of muzzle discharge. Hassan saw red-rimmed eyes, dilated from combat stims, shot deep in stretched skin. He thrust the hyperacid capsule, still clutched in his left fist, into the man's face, smashing it open before throwing himself clear. The screams were unholy, a cacophony of animal shrieks and gurgling, throttled agony. The smell of charred flesh filled the corridor, accompanied by bloody splatters as the acid ate down to the man's arteries. Hassan scrabbled away, grabbing hold of Farouk's reeling body and hauling it clear. The enemy staggered away from them, clutching at his disintegrating face. Then he collapsed, twitching, his savaged head and neck steaming and popping. Hassan got back to his knees, breathing heavily. The two operatives he'd left at the doors reached his position. They stared down at the twisted body of the enemy warrior, then at Farouk. Farouk coughed, spraying blood against Hassan's armor.
How bad?
Hassan flipped his visor closed.
Significant.
Hassan felt the heavy weight of Farouk's body in his arms. He wouldn't do much more fighting.
We're almost done.
Hassan lowered Farouk carefully to the ground and moved over to the sealed doors.
Then we're on our way out.
Hassan primed the charge, clamped it, and withdrew. The four of them shuffled back away from the doors, and the crack grenade went off with a sharp, focused report, blasting a jagged hole in the metal.
Got to bring them running.
Hassan rose to his feet and headed for the broken entrance, reloading as he went.
Let's retrieve the target and get out before they catch us.
Hassan didn't notice the sigilite enter the room. One moment he was alone, the next he was staring directly at a cowled old man clutching a staff. he collected himself.
Forgive me for keeping you waiting, Captain. Lord Dorne is well-meaning, but has never mastered brevity.
Hassan clasped his hands behind his back and stood straight. He could feel his pulse picking up, throbbing through the veins at his neck. Something about the man before him put him on edge. He felt an unaccountable urge to look away. The sigillite was slight. His stoop made him short, and his hands gripped his flickering staff as though for support. For all the man's frailty, Hassan could sense the quiet power radiating from him, as deep and cold as a well shaft. He does not hide it. He could destroy everything around us with a gesture. The sigillite reached a bony hand up to his hood and pushed the fabric back. An old, old face emerged, deep-lined and ember-dry. Bones jutted under drawn flesh, stark like the profile of famishment. But his eyes were alive, deep, darting eyes that moved with an almost avian sharpness. Those eyes held Hassan for a moment. He felt his mouth go dry. Then the sigillite released him. He walked over to a low couch and lowered himself down. His movements were halting, like one who had once been trained to the peak of physical perfection but had since been terribly wounded. It was a strangely affecting sight. Malkador leaned back, his grey face smoothed by a fraction, his clenched features relaxed. He put the staff aside and his withered hands rested on his bony lap.
Sit.
Hassan did as he was told, moving over to a leather armchair facing the couch. He felt his hands trembling.
Will you drink?
Malkador glanced at a carafe on the table between them. As soon as he mentioned it, Hassan felt a thirst kindle at the back of his throat.
No, thank you.
Malkador poured himself a glass of what looked like wine. He brought the glass up to his hooked nose and let the aroma linger for a moment.
I remember when there were vines in Frank.
He took a sip, swirled it in his mouth, and swallowed.
So much easier now. It even tastes as good. What does it? How would we know? Who now lives who walked the vineyards of old?
He pursed his thin lips, pensive.
Some of us remember.
Then his eyes snapped up, as unwavering as a raptor's.
What were you doing in Gyptus?
Clandestine mission, Lord. Orders received from the palace, maximum secrecy, military priority. We were given coordinates, times, access to an army lifter. Then we left.
Was that all?
I'd been given the location of a single bunker. I checked it, just as always. Right until the end, I thought we'd got it right.
Malkador nodded.
Right until the end.
Hassan felt his cheeks flush. The humiliation of it had still not left him.
Perhaps if we'd known what we were looking for.
But that would have defeated the point, would it not? Knowledge is dangerous in your profession. It is dangerous in all professions.